I call the 93rd Senate session of the Associated Students to order here November 19th at 5:35 p.m. convening both in the Reno Light Senate Chambers and via Zoom. With that being said, we're moving on to Agenda Item 2, Compliance with Nevada Open Meeting Law. Agenda Item 2A was the agenda posted 3 full working days by 9 a.m., not including the meeting date. It was attached below is the agenda attached to the AH1 website. Agenda Item 2B is the meeting taking place on the day of the week, month, day, year, at the time and location listed on the agenda. It is a Zoom link working and available to the public. It is. With that being said, moving on to Agenda Item 3, Pledge of Allegiance and Land Acknowledgement. Please stand. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please remain standing for the land acknowledgement. We acknowledge that the University of Nevada is situated on the traditional homelands of the Northern Paiute, Washoe, Western Shoshone, and Southern Paiute peoples. These lands continue to be a gathering place for indigenous peoples, and we recognize their deep connections to these places. We extend our appreciation for the opportunity to live and learn on their territory. You may now be seated. Moving on to Agenda Item 4, roll call. Let's clerk when I call the roll, please.
Speaker Ackland.
Present.
Senator Atkinson.
Present.
Senator Barris.
Present.
Senator Bourgeois.
Present.
Senator Bolander.
Present.
Senator Calderon.
Present.
Senator Castro.
Present.
Senator Dayton.
Present.
Senator DeBarger.
Present.
Senator Evans.
Present.
Senator Huang.
Present.
Parliamentarian Issa.
Present.
Senator Kitch.
Present.
Senator Custard.
Present.
Senator Lawson.
Tardy excused.
Senator Lucchese.
Present.
Senator McAndrews.
Present.
Senator Micelli.
Present.
Speaker Pro Tempore Moss.
Present.
Senator Radke.
Present.
Senator Saporito.
Present.
Senator Villa.
Present.
A quorum is present.
Thank you. Before we move on to any other business on the agenda, I do ask that the senators use the mics due to the fact of the transcription for our Zoom. Along with that, before you speak, just for our new secretaries and for minutes and all that good stuff, if you would please speak like by using your name before you speak, you know, Senator so-and-so representing just for the record, that would be great. But with that, moving down to Agenda Item 5, adoption of minutes, there are no minutes to be approved of at this time. With that being said, moving down to Agenda Item 6, public comment. Is there any public comment at this time? Press and hold.
Policy Director Atencio, Department of Government Affairs, for the record. I'm giving public comment on behalf of my co-worker, Advocacy Coordinator. Good evening, Senators. Aiden Casey, for the record, CASEY. I hope you guys are doing well this evening. For those of you who don't know, I serve as Advocacy Director of the Department of Government Affairs for ASUN. I'm here today to urge all of you guys and every ASUN officer to involve themselves as much as possible in the political process through testimony and public comment. In the Department of Government Affairs, it's our job to represent ASUN at all levels of government and to provide testimony on bills that affect the school. While we work very hard to advocate for the students and for the association, we are a small four-person department who could always use more voices. One voice is very strong, but having 20-plus students and officers hammering down the same message will only make the advocacy for ASUN and for the students stronger and better. That's why I'm encouraging you all, Senators, to write and deliver public comment in support of ASUN and the students, and I'm offering to oversee and help write any public comment that you may need help with. If we can come together and have multiple voices advocating for what's best for the students, it will have a huge impact. As student leaders, it's important that we remain on the same page, so if you're giving public comment under ASUN, please run it by us to make sure we're not contradicting our messages. With the upcoming Board of Regents meeting in Las Vegas in December, and with at least two extremely important agenda items likely being voted on, I hope to see you guys supporting us and helping advocate for the undergraduate student body. I'm always available to help write or look over any testimony that you guys do write. Please just shoot me an email or reach out to me and I'll help with anything. My email is outreach@asun.unr.edu. I look forward to hearing from some of you guys in the future. Thank you for your time and have a good night.
All right, thank you. Any other public comment at this time? Please say your name and position for the record.
Hello, everyone. I'm Kira Mendoza, the current Interim Director of Campus and Public Relations. I want to briefly and quickly talk about the bill to reform the duties of the Department of Campus and Public Relations and what it means to me. I am fully in support of this bill because it is greatly detailed and it helps me out a lot. This piece matches what I do on a day-to-day basis and my relationship with INCLA. I appreciate the understanding of what I do and what my role entails. I respect the depth of this bill, so thank you so much, Senator McAndrews and Parliamentarian Issa.
Thank you. Any other public comment at this time? Alrighty. I did have one public comment that was sent in to me that reads as follows. Dear ASUN Senators, my name is Luca, and I'm a finance student here at UNR and the president of Zeta Psi. A member of the chapter of the IIFC, I'm writing to you regarding the recent updates in regard to the rules of tailgating. Being heavily involved in Greek life for the past years, I have learned just how important risk management and following safety protocols are to ensure the well-being of our members and other members of the broader community. Student safety should always be foundational to any policy decision, and policies that prioritize safety are essential not just for prevention, but for fostering a responsible and welcoming game day culture. With that in mind, I also recognize the role that equipment regulations play in maintaining a safe environment. Clear guidelines for tailgate items like stages and speakers help reduce hazards and ensure that all student organizations are held to the same standard. These regulations help student leaders like myself plan proactively, mitigate risks, and host events that reflect positively on the university and the student community. I would also like to emphasize that collaboration between the university administration and student leadership. When policies are developed or updated in a partnership with those who are most directly affected, the result is stronger practical rules and a greater sense of shared responsibility. Continued communication between ASUN, IFC, and IIFC leadership and university officials ensures that the voices of students are heard and are recognized in the decision-making process. This collaborative approach allows us to work toward the same goal: safe, successful, and enjoyable experiences for all students. My hope is that ASUN can work towards getting reasonable regulations put in place that would allow for an enjoyable experience at tailgates in the future. I believe the rules in place for the last tailgate were somewhat reasonable and hope we do not have to go back to the rules outlined in the November 10th email that disallow large speaker setups and elevated platforms. I know that it is important to set limits, but taking those away would severely impact school spirit and student involvement at sporting events. Thank you for your time and for your commitment to supporting the student body. Is there any other public comment at this time? All right. Seeing none, moving down to agenda item 7, receipts and petitions of correspondence to the Senate. With that being said, I'm seeking a motion to approve agenda item 7A through D through unanimous consent.
So moved.
So moved by Speaker Pro Tempore Moss. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Senator Custer. Is there any dissent? Any abstentions? With that being said, those receipts have been approved. All right. Moving down to agenda item 11, motions to fast track appointments. With that being said, I'm seeking a motion to fast track agenda items 11A through D through unanimous consent.
So moved.
So moved by Parliamentarian Issa. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Senator Barris. Is there any dissent? Any abstentions? All right, that being said, those nominees have been fast tracked. All right. Now, with that being said, we're going to be moving real down our agenda to agenda item 19C from a update from on in regard to the tech fee. So let me get that presentation ready.
I'm the Vice President for Information Technology and Chief Information Officer at UNR. And to my right is
Catherine Hartwell, Dean of Libraries.
And Ed Upton, Executive Director, Office of Digital Learning.
So we are the three that kind of manage this student tech fee fund that you graciously approved last year when we came in front of you and asked for an increase after a decade of working with the same fees. With your support, we were able to get that through to the Board of Regents last December, and now we want to come back and give you an update of all the good things we're doing with the increased fees and the revenue that we have collected as part of the fall registration process. So, So basically, I just wanted to review what is the student tech fee. First of all, it's two parts. This part is talking about the what we call student tech fee regular portfolio, and it's covered in the Board of Regents Handbook Title IV, Chapter 10. And these are the elements that make up that portfolio. I mean, it's a whole bunch of stuff there that you can see. A lot of the things that you already recognize and you're using it on a daily basis across campus by all students. So I won't iterate into going into every single detailed element of that, but it's there. We're always available for questions. Please stop me if there's any questions that you have come up, and we can cover that as we go through the presentation. Okay, next please. Okay, so one of the things we wanted to do, and we covered these slides in terms of thinking. Thank you. So one of the things we wanted to cover is even before we got the increase, we tried to stay within our means and looked at opportunities to reduce the cost. One of the things that we did over the course of the last year and a half is to eliminate the Google Workspace for Education. We took a completely parallel system in duplication of our Microsoft Office environment. So we were successfully able to move all the students from the Google Workspace into our Microsoft environment. That saves essentially about $75,000 from the student tech on an annual basis. Eliminated support for Commvault, which is a high-performance computing cluster. There's only about 15 to 20 students across the university that were using that capability, and we were subsidizing that to the tune of about $70,000 a year. Again, the way we look at how we need to spend the money, we want to influence and impact as many students on campus as possible, rather than just a handful. Eliminated lynda.com, which is another $48,000, and some of the fees for Qualtrics and MathCAD and other specialized software where we paid out of the student tech fee, we moved that to the appropriate departments that were heavily using those packages rather than and then burden the student tech fee. And then, of course, reduced expenses related to backup solutions. And that. So you can see there's a sizable amount of money we were able to save on an annual basis, even before we got the increase approved by imports. Next. Okay. Then the next. Oh, did I go back? Okay. Sorry. Is that good? Yeah, then you go the right way. Okay. Classroom upgrades with up-to-date technology. These are the benefits of the increases. Public use in lab computers and using the latest operating systems. Just to give you an idea, we have about 1,800 computer lab machines spread across over 80 different spaces in the campus. And we'll talk a little bit more about what we want to do with that type of inventory. Then, of course, access to more specialized software, Qualtrics and MATLAB, we'll talk about that, and contemporary software tools, and then of course we are also open to suggestions from the student body as to what new tools that you would like us to consider to make available for the entire student body. And then more of a better technology lending program. I think Catherine can talk about that. We were started that, and it's been heavily used, and we try to make sure that we have sufficient technology that we're able to loan out to students who need it. Appropriately. And then, of course, the AI tools for educational professional use is the other thing that we're considering. Okay. That's the same thing. All right. This is just to give you a bird's eye view of how the budget is spent. Majority of the money is spent in terms of basic computing technologies, which is computer labs and some of the software items that we covered. But the other bulk of the budget goes to supporting what Ed, and he can talk more about where that money goes, primarily in classroom technology. And there'll be a slide that will be talking about that. So basically, that a little bit of money goes to Catherine's operations, where she manages the lending technologies that I talked about a few minutes ago. Okay, so I'm going to turn it over to Ed. He can speak to what's happening in his world.
All right, so these are the immediate investments that we have made or making the increased student tech fees. The top one is top hat licensing. So you probably know this is Clicker software. And this is something that I've actually been working on for probably the last 10 years with your predecessors from many moons ago. When I started here, there were three different platforms used for student engagement in the classrooms. They were all student pay. And so students could encounter three different costs with their courses, depending on what they were taking. So we've worked to slowly move towards universal platform, Top Hat now. And then one of the long-term goals was not having a student pay model, but having an institutionally paid model. And so we're finally there. And so we are now, and for the last year and a half or so, we have been under a essentially paid model. The provost was paying it initially as kind of bridge funds until we got to the student tech fee increase. So I'm very happy to say that we've finally gotten this to essentially paid model, so students aren't getting hit with an additional fee when their classes are using the engagement software. And we're working on a multi-year agreement that Ms. Ashi will talk about tomorrow. The next thing that has already been completed was upgrades to the DMS 110 auditorium. And so we upgraded the system in there, so it now supports full HD images throughout, a standardized instructor podium, and improved audio capabilities in that space. We are also planning to upgrade the remaining analog classrooms. It's amazing that we still have those, but we were just funding restricted to replace those. So right now we're working on SEM 201 and CANE 103. Those are the last two remaining analog lecture halls. Part of the problem for that is they have dual projection that were 4-3, and there's no real estate to do dual projection 69, so we had to figure out another game plan there. So we have a good plan in place, and we plan to implement that over the summer. The next item is class lab upgrade funding. And so to appreciate this, you have to understand the difference between essentially scheduled classroom, which is classrooms that can be used by any of the different areas of study. Class labs are classrooms that are assigned to a specific department or unit. Historically, there was a gap in funding for those spaces. Think like the labs and the upstairs of DMS, those sort of spaces. And so what happened is the technology was very old and we had no way to fund those. So now we have a dedicated chunk of money for those spaces. We're initially going to address the upper floors of DMS. That'll happen over the summer. And then we're going to move on to other spaces. Eventually this will turn into a process where departments can apply for those funds. We had to get through the backlog, so we're in that first 1 to 2 years, and then we'll move on to that process. The last update I have was one of the kind of wish list items that ASUN had communicated when we were asking for the student tech fee increase, which was Quizlet. We were planning on purchasing Quizlet as part of our agreement. However, during parallel conversations, the provost office licensed a product called CircleIn. And CircleIn is available to all students in all courses on campus, and it provides pretty much all of the functionality of Quizlet provided that we were already licensing. So, in the interest of being good stewards of the money, we opted to just leverage CircleIn rather than license. So that's kind of the overview of what ODL has done so far with the increase in tech fees.
The next one I want to talk about is what Central IT is doing. And because of our director of user services to strike a good bargain and buying a large number of machines at one time, we're able to get a significant reduction in the original projector cost of each computer lab machine that we wanted to replace with closer to $1,700. We were able to knock that off by about $500 a piece. And what that did was we were able to look and replace machines that we're only planning to replace a year or two from now already. So we reaped great benefits by buying in volume and being able to refresh many more machines than we originally planned for this fiscal year. And those are the places that those those computers have been refreshed. And then 18 new Apple Studios, and Kevin, I don't know if you want to say a few words of that.
Yeah, this is the space down in At One. It is where you can do the media editing, media projects that require having good computers with large processing, and you can work on any media projects. So a lot of classes from around the university, especially those in art or anything with film or media, it's tied into the storage system, and one of the investments where we went half and half with the libraries and OIT. And so that is up and ready to go. And just something else about what Sasha was saying for the first one. The KC and U of Mayer are the largest public labs for you all. The machines in there, are a lot of them are from 2019. So the life of the computer, you know, they're ready to be replaced. So I basically four or five are they're the oldest. They'll be replaced, plus DataWorks, which are the more intensive, high-powered, specialized computers. There's DataWorks North and DataWorks South. Those are also getting upgraded as well. You have access to all of those. I get like Lendable Tech, I get about 3% of the budget, but the reason I'm really sitting here is because of all the public lab spaces that we have and make available.
So we work closely as a team. The next thing is remote services. One of the things we are trying to do is not only replace computers in place in this computer labs, but also to take a look at other technologies to be able to have shareable environments. And third one is network throughput. We are putting some money aside to be able to increase that. But a lot of that funding for increasing network came from our CFO, Mr. Klinger. So thank you for making that possible to enhance our network throughout the campus. So that's that. So I just want to talk a little bit about computer labs. I mentioned earlier about 1,800 machines and over 80 spaces. So replacing computer labs as is in place, that was a great idea 10, 15 years ago. With a lot of the incoming freshmen now for 4 years straight, we have been providing iPads, brand new iPads to all incoming freshmen. So the number of students who have their own devices is only on the increase, and it's only going to continue to increase. So providing a physical computer lab is only open from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. really doesn't satisfy the students' need. We want something that's available and accessible 24/7 and without supervision in that sense. So it reduces our cost, it improves access, it improves your ability to use these services around the clock. So we're looking at two additional technologies. One is trying to put some more money aside, which we have done this year for each of these two additional ideas, which is to increase remote desktop services. Every time I spend a dollar in remote desktop services, it's a threefold increase in terms of the capacity of use rather than replacing one machine. It's basically getting a shared environment that more students can participate and use. It's a more effective use of the money. It's a better access for you all. Third thing we're looking at is also exploring the opportunity of putting a computer lab, physical computer lab, virtually in the cloud. And making it. There again, we'll get significant benefits because we only then pay for the time each of you use that computing facility in the cloud. So we're looking at some numerical equations to see how much better or more effective we can do that. We're not eliminating the physical computers, but this will be a slow migration of more and more computers, our computer lab equivalent services, ending up in remote desktop services and the cloud.
So the libraries for this particular category is Lendable Tech and Specialty Spaces. So if you have been down in Atlanta on the first floor or at UMare, the Makerspace or GIS Labs, GIS Labs you can provide. But I think we split that too. So these are the kinds that we try to make tech available. And in addition, we don't charge any personnel to the tech fee. So down in Atlanta and at UMare, you have a lot of specialty staff. Help you with tech projects. So just some highlights, some of the things that we've done with, we've always, technology gets used, wears out, new things come out. We do have circulating hotspots. We have 30 new ones. So if you need a hotspot for a short period of time, you can check one out. I think we limit them to a month now, so you're in a bind, something happens, you don't have wireless at home, you can check it out. Or I know sometimes ASUN checks that out for events somewhere, they check that out. We do have circulating laptops. They're not intended to be your machine forever. They are, if you need a laptop for a particular reason, we have some specifically for grad students that are the real high-powered processing ones, but there's lots of other good Windows laptops to check out. The Dynamic Media Lab is the one that we just talked about, the Mac Lab, the Macs. dual monitors in math lab. The libraries paid 50% and the OIT paid 50% for that. Just to make, this was, well, it's, even if this was before Ben got the good deal, it's fine. And I was here talking to you folks not too long ago. We were talking about AI, and one of the things about the libraries I really appreciate about my team is they're very experimental and forward-looking. We have now an AI VR training platform called Ovation. So if you are doing like a presentation, you're doing an interview, you're learning a second language, it's a VR AR headset, and it interacts with you. So you can learn, you can work on your second language skills, you can work on your presentation skills, and there are even some counseling type things. Again, not to be a counselor, but like if you're practicing to be a counselor, what that might entail. So there's the VR headsets. CDC is a laser cutter kind of machine that's down in the makerspace, one of our specialty spaces. And we are continuing, 3D printing is really popular for all students. There are some a makerspace in the art department and engineering, but the thing about the makerspace in the libraries, it's available to all students. So you don't have to be in one of those, you know, in engineering, you don't have to be in art. It's available to all of you, even if you're an engineer or art.
The next one is the other fee that we talked about. There are two components. One is the regular, that's what we finished going over now. The second part of the student technology fee actually feeds into MyNevada. It supports that whole environment, which is the student information system. And it supports over 80 integrations. If you look at it, it's the central nervous system of the university, the student information system. It is connected to all kinds of other applications. It is a heavy lift to maintain that environment for all the things that we do from the academic side. And it also supports the personnel that runs that environment. Okay, so one of the things we asked for as part of the fee increase was to do equally increase the unit fee. Of course, better technology support, better, more staffing. The other thing that we are implementing, it'll be available as of mid of December this year, is multi-factor authentication. This is the only way to continue to improve our cybersecurity and posture across the university. So that is one large system that we are now able to implement multi-factor authentication. And then the other big thing that we are bringing in is the student financial planning program. And then we can talk a little bit about that. Basically, why are we doing that? It's a flexible cloud-based solution. And the whole idea here is it provides success with first-generation students, provides an increased decision-making on the side of the university, allows prospective students to be able to consider early decisions. And we have found early decisions helps in bringing students to their preferred choice of the university earlier rather than waiting for the last minute. So this, we are hoping, not only improves opportunity for more students to come to UNR, and be able to make that decision sooner and quicker. And on the administrative side, we'll be able to deliver those packages sooner with less mistakes and less administrative overhead. So all in all, it's a great example of improved automation. And then of course, it is more compliant with the federal environment. And the other issue that we always face is people are not filling out the FAFSA forms, not completing them accurately, nor are they doing it early enough. So this program will help us to actually manage that environment better, getting more people to fill out the FAFSA and being able to make early decisions. So bottom line is it should help these students, and it'll also help the university with increased enrollment. So I just have one slide here that I wanted to cover. It's a very complicated environment. This is going to take us 2 years to actually implement it, but the good news is we have already started the journey. Within a year, we should be able to actually create all the data files that are needed to be able to make early decisions. And so we will go live with this program fall of 2027. And there are 7 components, and we have already scheduled as to when all these things need to happen. Like I said, this is the central nervous system of the university when it comes to managing students in the academic side of the house. And so this is a huge improvement. This will be entirely run in the cloud with tentacles coming back to the existing student information system that we are running as part of the NC environment. So I don't want to go into them. There's a lot of, I have more detailed slides on that, but I think I'll just stop right there. And unless you have some questions about it.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. All righty, does anybody have any questions? Senator Custer, go ahead.
Thank you so much for the presentation. There's a lot of great information there. I just had a question. I heard that the university is considering from switching from iPads to Surface Pros or Surface laptops. I was just curious if you have any information on that or what your thoughts are, just kind of the general direction of that.
Yeah, go ahead.
So none of us run the Digital Wolfpack Initiative, yeah, but I probably have the closest relationship to it. And so we're currently piloting Surface. So there was a group of transfer students that were the initial 100 students that received those devices. And so that was an initial pilot to see how they worked, what was the student reaction to them, all of those sort of things. There are some discussions, and they haven't been finalized, about a college being selected to pilot these in the future. College of Business was one that's been floated. College of Engineering is another one. None of that decisions have been finalized right now. So stay tuned. More information will be forthcoming. But once those decisions have been made, I would expect communications to come from the administration, letting folks know about that. Like I said, I'm part of the DWPI leadership group, so I can communicate with the actual person that leads it and make sure that they come back.
The only thing I can add to that is there are about, I think we purchased 70 Surfaces, and I think we have distributed about half of them so far.
Well, there's 100 students that were identified for them, so I think it was 150 that actually got purchased.
And were half, yeah, okay.
And I think there's
half of them,
about half actually might now are still out. So because that was the 100 that they started with, and then there was attrition from that.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it, of course.
Senator Bolander.
And just follow up on Senator Boyer, for the record, just to follow up on Senator Custer's question. When we added the Digital Wolfpack Initiative, it was $100 in order to benefit mentors also receive the iPads along with the benefit to participate. For instance, that could be the same case for benefit for mentors to also receive the new Microsoft.
It would be the same protocol. So if the mentors are part of the college that gets selected to do that pilot, if and then those mentors would get the same devices that the students that they're mentoring would get.
Senator McAndrews.
Senator McAndrews, for the record. So you guys have a lot of great services for students. What are some ways that you guys promote your services to students?
Great question. I sometimes feel we don't do enough of that communication. So we have a lot of services, to your point. Maybe students are not fully aware of them. So that's one area I think we have to invest a little bit more time. Most of our communication today, especially on this topic, has been through this mechanism here. We haven't done any what I would call open campus forums, but I think now since we have added money, that's a great suggestion. We should probably look into doing more outreach.
I think probably we, the libraries, have the most public-facing communication and interaction because the users are the ones who come to us the most. We rely on the infrastructure behind the scenes, but we had to be more the public face of some of that stuff and try to promote the hours, try to promote ways that students can use things. Classes, we work with a lot of classes every year. So it's just becoming learning things that way.
I think it's always one of the biggest challenges that we have is, and we have it with the faculty and with the students, is we have things and getting that awareness level where we want it is just always something that there's room for improvement on. But one of the things that we try to do as part of the Digital Wolfpack Initiative, but as just general resources, is Digital Learning Day. And so that's something we've done each spring for the last couple of years, and it will be done again March 5th, and it happens in the breezeway at the library. So it'll be tech giveaways, we'll have all the vendors for the products we support out, there'll be presentations, all those sort of things. So But I think there's definitely room for us to come and talk to you guys more often to share, what we do.
Does anybody have any other questions besides Senator Dayton and Senator Zapparito? All right, Senator Dayton and Senator Zapparito, go ahead.
Hi, Senator Dayton, for the record. So I'm a transfer student. I have a service program. I'm on the ELD program. And I've been really curious about this program, so I've been doing a lot of outreach for this. And we've talked about how the service program is better because it can run more advanced software, but specifically for like art students and engineering, like students in business. But a unique solution to that that doesn't involve like physical like hardware is remote web page access or remote desktop services. So I'm really curious about your guys' idea to like replace the physical computer lab and put it in the cloud, because that would solve a lot of issues students are facing, as well, especially if you get that to be a little faster, because I know remote web access can be really slow for students in their own, like, dorms and stuff. So what is the timeline for getting everything moved to this cloud?
Yeah, good point. So we are already spending the money to increase and beef up our backend for more desktop services. If you want to think of that environment, it's similar to having a local cloud on-prem. So you start to get some of the benefits. One thing I need to warn everybody is that some of the vendors are not very friendly to work with, and they will not allow us to virtualize the software. So in some cases, we are stuck with having to put that software or physical machine on-prem. So there are some exceptions, but generally speaking, our direction is that we want to move more in the cloud. Now, on the real cloud side, we have actually made significant progress, and many folks are interested in finding out more about what we're doing on the research computing side. We can come back and give a presentation on that. What I'm really excited about, there are two important things I can mention since you gave me an opening on that, is we have made a direct connection, a high-speed connection to AWS, using the downtown what we call point of presence connection, so which means that we don't have to pay for ingress and egress charges for data working with the AWS cloud. So we are going to be putting more regulated data environments and also regular environments like the computing labs that we just finished talking about in the cloud to be able to experiment with that. I'm hoping that will be up and running in the first quarter of next year. Okay. So, and the second thing we're doing, since I got this opportunity to share, is as you know, the university is going through a huge upgrade of a planetarium. Instead of going a projection-based system, they're using, I think, 8K monitors, super high definitions, equivalent to the kind of capability you probably have seen in the Sphere in Vegas. So we'll have that capability. Very few universities even have a planetarium, let alone something of this at most high-end capability. So one of the things we are doing this is not just only to use it as a planetarium, but actually use it as a physical laboratory where the faculty members and students can do research and do render the visualization right on the planetarium in an immersive type of environment. I mean, in other words, this is how you can get up close and personal with your own data. You know, being in the planetarium and being able to visualize it is a great educational tool. It's also a great research tool.
Go ahead.
Just to follow up, so is Adobe included in one of those
unfriendly
vendors?
No, yes, it is one of those vendors that you have
issues with. So yeah. Adobe is an unfriendly vendor?
Correct,
okay. Yes.
I'm writing using my definition. Yes.
All right, last person to ask a question, Senator Zapparito, go ahead.
Thank you for the presentation. So let's say that we know Adobe's unfriendly. Do you know if there's any specific services that would be accessible with this initiative? And when would the funding be placed on the specific departments or colleges, if whatever this initiative is ready to remote services?
So we have already earmarked the money for remote desktop services. We have not spent any money on the real cloud, the AWS environment yet. And we have already started spending money, and that's the presentation we made with all the computer labs, the specialized labs that Catherine talked about, and also classroom technology that Ed talked about. So we already started spending some of the money that we've been getting from the fall increased fees.
All righty. With that, no more questions. Thank you guys. Thank you guys for coming in. Alrighty, our next order of business on the agenda is agenda item 19D. We're going to be hearing a presentation from Vice President Klinger. ready to start whenever. The floor is yours.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Speaker, Senators. Good evening, everyone. I'm Andrew Klinger. I'm the Vice President of Administration and Finance at the University. So I'm going to talk about, I'm going to give you a big picture of our university budget, all the different, what I call, buckets of funding that that fund the university, from grants, student fees, state funding, and other. So for those of you that are in finance or accounting, this might be fun. For the rest of you, I don't know, maybe not so much. So we'll jump right in. This is actually a presentation. You'll see it's fiscal year 24, so it's a little bit old. Just haven't had time to update it. But it'll give you a big picture of how our finances work. This is actually a presentation that I put together for legislators in the spring as we were down in Carson City lobbying for more funding. One of the things that we hear, and we've heard it for a long time, is the lack of transparency, and you don't know where your money is. And so I actually put this presentation together in response to that. This page right here, really everything I'm going to talk about tonight is sort of summarized on this page. So this single slide, at a very high summarized level, this is the entire university budget on one slide. So if you go all the way to the right-hand side under total revenues, you can see that as a university, we have almost $1 billion in total revenues, grants, other funds. And then the different columns in that spreadsheet there represent what I call the different buckets of funding. So you see the first one there is the state operating budget. And so the state operating budget, total revenues of $360 million, that includes our, what we call sort of our main operating account. It includes the med school, it includes Ag Extension. There are other pieces to that break down. You can imagine with $1 billion budget, there are literally hundreds of accounts and sub-accounts, and so what you're seeing tonight is literally summarized on seven slides. So our main account, the state operating budget, is partially funded by the state. It's also partially funded by student fees. So you see that second line there, student fees. You'll see student fees in the state budget, in self-supporting, and then capital. So that's the main registration fee. We split that into different buckets, if you will. So for this semester, it's $288.50 a credit is the main registration fee. And most of that goes into the state operating budget, but other parts of it go into what we call general improvement, student access, capital improvement, those sorts of things, and you'll see those as we go across. The other on this in the state operating budget, that $15.4 million, that is primarily through the med school. They have an affiliation agreement with Renown, and so about $10 million of that represents payments from Renown for our partnership with it. We actually take state money, send it to Medicaid, Medicaid matches it, Renown gets it, and then we get some of it back. That's sort of the mechanism there. In the self-supporting column there, so a big part of that is student access fees. So when you pay that $288.50 in your registration fee, 15% of it automatically goes to what we call student access, and that's for essentially scholarships for institution scholarships for students. Other components of that self-supporting amount are differential fees, lab fees. I mean, you guys know you get your bill, there's a lot of different fees on there. Part of it goes to the state operating budget, but a lot of that ends up in that self-supporting column there on that, in that second column. Self-supporting other, and I sort of split these out because I think it's important to show the student fee portion and this what we call self-supporting other. So the other there, that top line, that 2.8 million, that's a piece of the student fee, actually the general improvement fee that goes to athletics. So that 2.8 million goes to athletics. And I'll get into some of these a little more in the other slides as we break some of these numbers down a little bit more. Under other revenue, there's line items in there such as facilities and administration charge. That's essentially an overhead charge on grants. That includes what we call sales and services. So for example, ticket sales in athletics would be in that $153 million number. So those are some of the things that make up that column. The self-supporting auxiliary, so that's going to be residence halls, dining, student health services. Those are all going to be in what we call auxiliary, so you can see how much we collect there through those numbers as well. And then capital funds. So capital funds is the fund that we use to not only to maintain campus, but to build new buildings. So for example, the new business building on the south end of campus, part of that student fee you'll see there goes into capital funds, and part of that is used to pay the debt, essentially, on that business building. There's also state funds in there where we receive state funds for capital, for deferred maintenance, and those sorts of things. And then on that one under capital, that $11 million is primarily gifted funds, is what that represents. And then the last two columns, gifts and grants, pretty self-explanatory. Those are gifts so the first column there, gifts, is just that, it's gifts that we receive. The grant funds, so those are both federal and state grant funds. And so when I talked about, for example, that facilities and administration charge that we count in self-supporting, on that $192 million in grants, we collect about $33 million in what we call facilities and administration. And that's just to recognize that there are overhead costs that we need to, that those grants need to help cover. So I'm not going to get into the operating side on this side, but that, again, is a $1 billion budget summarized in one slide. So just breaking that down a little bit further, and this is a little bit repetitive, but it gives you a different view of it. You can see that as a whole, when you look at all funding sources, it's primarily student fees, grants, and state funding. I mean, those other areas are not as significant, but it's mostly state funding, student fees, and then grants and contracts. And the thing about grants and contracts is those funds are for specific purposes. So you can't really take funding that you have in grants and contracts, or really even in sales and services, and say, oh, well, let's move that over to the state side to help balance the budget, because those are all collected for very specific purposes, and really can't be used in other areas. And that's one of the things in explaining this to legislators, because they look at this and they say, oh, look at all this money you have. You know, if you go back to the prior slide on there, I have the ending balances, and they say, wait, you have $192 million. Why can't you balance your own budget with that? And the answer is because as you look at it and you look at where those funds are, those funds are collected for specific purposes. So the auxiliary column there, for example, that $33.8 million is literally collected for residence halls, dining, and those sorts of things. So a lot of that money is set aside to upgrade dorms and do those sorts of things. So the last thing we want to do is take that money that's set aside to maintain and update the dorms and move it to help balance our budget. So most of our funding, it goes to employees, so salary and wages. The other big category is, and again, this is rolled up at a very high level, supplies and services. So that's all of your other operating costs. You can see fringe benefits there, which is really part of the salary and wages. So that's retirement benefits, that's health insurance. So that's all employee related, that $127.4 million. So this is what we spend a lot of our time focused on, is the state operating budget. And I know you've had a presentation, I think, from the chancellor talking about student fees and the student fee increase and the gap in funding that we had. This is where that would be. That would be in the state operating budget. And so in the 23 session, the legislature provided cost of living adjustments to university employees, and they didn't fully fund that, and they left us a gap. So for us, that gap was $11.2 million. And there's an item, I think you probably all know, on the December board meeting to look at increasing fees. Now, the reason for that is to help cover the gap. The legislature did give us funding for the current two-year cycle that we're in, so this fiscal year and next fiscal year, but that money is going to expire, and so there's been obviously conversations about fee increases to cover that. So if that is implemented, for example, the proposal is a 3%, a 4%, and a 5% starting next year, fiscal 27, and then 28 and 29. Where that line item would show up on here is, you see that $114.7 million in student fees, that number would go up 3%, for example, to help cover that gap if you're looking at that slide. So again, a breakdown just when you're looking at the state budgets. I mean, it's almost 80% of the state budget is almost goes to employee salary and benefits. That's the big blue piece of the pie there, and the orange piece of the pie. There's obviously some operating costs in there, but really a bulk of it is employees. And so when we look at budget cuts or we look at gaps in our budget, what we do primarily to fill that is we hold positions vacant. Whether it's faculty positions or other positions, we end up holding positions vacant because really, as that's 80% of the budget, if we don't do that, there's not a lot of other places we can go to make reductions. So the final, I think two slides, no, one slide. So the final slide here just gives you a breakdown of the different types of employees. So we have what we call, and these really are state classifications. We have professional employees and classified employees. So all your faculty are going to be professional employees. I'm considered administrative faculty, so I'm a professional employee. Your classified employees are going to be staff, like your groundskeepers and those sorts of things. They're going to be classified employees. So you can see, and there are other employees, student workers are not on here. Part-time employees that are not on here, but full-time employees, when you look at professional and classified, is over 3,000 employees. So those are the slides. The other thing I would say, just from a transparency standpoint, there's a couple other places that you can go and look at budgets if you really want to get into the details. So if you go to unr.edu and you just search budget office, so on that budget office page, what you'll find is you'll find a couple of tabs at the top, data at a glance that has just some high-level data there. There's also the budget book. So there's the budget book for fiscal year 26, which is the fiscal year that we're in, as well as fiscal year 25. That's about 130-plus page document if you really want to get into the details down to college, department, the positions, all of that data is in those budget books. And then finally, and it's not specific to budget data, but if you go to dataden.unr.edu, there's some, I think, cool data tables there on enrollment and other things on that dataden. And that dataden is a work in progress, and we're now working on some financial dashboards as well. There's no financial dashboards there other than what's on that budget page. But we're also working with a vendor to build out some data dashboards to help navigate, I think, the state or the university finances a little bit easier, because there are so many layers to it. As you can see just from looking at those seven slides, that's a very high level. Like I said, there's literally hundreds of different accounts that you can drill that into once you get to the dashboard part. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Alrighty, do any senators have any questions for the vice president? Senator Dayton and Senator McAndrews.
Hi, I really enjoyed your presentation. I have used data identified already, so really upfront, but let's get into finances. Just like on your side, you mentioned investment income is only like $13 million on the budget, or 1.4%, which to me seems really small. I am sure like paying off debts and there's like restrictions on how these fees can be spent. But could you speak to why our investment income is so little?
The investment income?
Yeah.
So the way our funds are invested is so take all our cash. So we have about on average a daily balance of let's just say $2 million. So all of our cash is pooled with all of the other institutions that is actually managed by the chancellor's office. So they take all that cash and they invest it, and they distribute that at a rate of 4.5%. So we normally get regular distributions from them, and that operating pool is managed fairly conservatively because those are all the operating dollars from the various institutions. So what that doesn't, what you don't see on here, what these numbers don't include, for example, is the foundation. Those funds are actually managed separately, and they're managed by the foundation. They have their own investment committee. So really, we're sort of at the mercy of the system office when it comes to how our funds are invested and sort of what rate of return we get back on those funds. But if you think of it as a cash pool on a daily basis of about $200 million, $13 million is still pretty good.
Senator McAndrews?
I yield my time.
Any other questions? Alrighty, thank you so much. Alrighty, we're going to be skipping past our director appointments as of right now due to the fact that the Chief Justice is not here to swear them in. So we're going to be going right into our Senate candidates. So where are my Senate candidates? Where you guys? Can you guys come over here for a sec, just so I can talk to you?
I'm pretty sure you have to put on a timer. They have like a 10-minute timer. Yeah. When they do it.
And they can go over that.
Yeah. When they start, and then 10-minute questions.
And then it's 10-minute discussion. 10-minute
discussion. It always...
Because we always extend it. So after both candidates have gone, we'll go into discussion period on the candidates. And then it's the Wild West from there.
Wait, so should I stop the recording right now?
No. You just time it on your thing. And after Dylan, they'll ask you how much time is left. You tell them. We should be on agenda. We're gonna go because we moved up, so we're on agenda item 19. Senate committee change. No. Okay. It's an item 12.
Does one of you guys have a timer? Like a 10-minute timer?
Go ahead. All floor is yours.
Hi, everyone. My name is Madison Burroughs. I am a senior in the Reynolds School of Journalism.
journalism. I'd like to start off by thanking you all for giving me this opportunity to present tonight. So a little bit of an outline about what I'm going to be talking about. First, I'm going to start with an introduction of myself, who I am, and then go into my experience and qualifications that I have. Following that, I'll talk about why I want to represent the RSJ and ASUN, and then my goals as senator of the Reynolds School. And then why me, why I stand out as a candidate, and then following that with a brief closing. So a little bit about me. I was born and raised here in Reno, Nevada. I went to Bishop Minot Catholic High School. I'm a fourth generation UNR student, so from a very young age, I have understood the importance of higher education, and I'm very grateful to be here at UNR. I'm majoring in journalism with an emphasis in PR and advertising, and I have two minors, one in communication studies and the other in political science. So now into my experience and qualifications. This past summer, I worked as a marketing intern for Muse Group Marketing. This opportunity was presented to me by the Reynolds School, and it was really cool to work with a bunch of amazing supportive women in a PR agency. I now work as a legal secretary at a law firm here in town, and recently I started interning for the executive branch here at ASUN. Although my time as an intern has been pretty short, I learned a lot about the ins and outs of what you guys do, the leadership, and everything that goes into event planning and all that you do. I am also in Tri Delta, a sorority here on campus. I serve as the director of lifetime membership. I work with alumni mainly. I'm a liaison between our alumni and our chapter here on campus. I also plan sisterhood events. And I do like mom and dad's weekend and stuff, which has been really fun. Along with that, I sit on our DEIAB committee. This committee has been very informative and super eye-opening. I've gone to learn the importance of having diversity and bringing different backgrounds and experience to the table and what that means, especially in a big group like a sorority. I'm also on the academic committee. I pride myself in my academics, and I put my best foot forward with everything that I do, and I've gone to share the importance of this with girls who more so need it than others. I'm also part of PRSSA Nevada. It is the Public Relations Student Society of America. This organization is through the Reynolds School, and I am the Vice President of Professional Development. So I work with our parent chapter, PRSA, which are a group of a bunch of PR professionals, and I get to match PR professionals to our mentors in PRSSA, and they serve as mentors. I have a mentor myself, and he's been very helpful with everything that's coming up post-grad, unfortunately, soon. So why I want to represent the Reynolds School and ASUN, I really want to support and advocate for Reynolds School students and do so by elevating their voices. I want students to feel like they can come to me and I'm an open door for them to share any feedback that they have. I want to listen to them, but not only listen, to put their feedback, make plans, and put them into action. I also value teamwork, communication, and community building. I think that without these three aspects, you can't get anything done, whether that be planning your event or being a part of an organization like ASUN. So now I'm going to go through my goals as the Reynolds School Senator. In order to elevate these students' voices and have them be heard, I want to host monthly office hours to get student feedback. Like I said before, I want students to feel like they can come to me with anything that they may have, whether that be Reynolds School improvements or ASUN improvements or UNR improvements, and I want to do the best that I can to implement this feedback. I also want to share extended updates with faculty within the Reynolds School, especially with Carrie Barber, who is our associate dean in the J School. She's the one that does all of our newsletters, and she does an amazing job showing opportunities such as jobs or career events that are going on or internships that are happening. However, I feel like there is a bit of a disconnect with what faculty know about what ASU is doing KSUN is doing, especially the Reynolds School Senator. And then finally, I want to advocate for paid-only internships for students. For in the Reynolds School, an internship is required to graduate. However, some of the opportunities that are presented to us are unpaid. I sat down and spoke with one of my professors, Allison Golden, and we talked about how over at the College of Business, they, although an internship isn't required, all of the opportunities that they present to their students are paid positions. So I spoke with Jim McClanahan, the director of outreach and engagement, and we talked about how it is only fair that if students are putting in the work that they kind of know they are, that they get paid for these opportunities, and especially because it is required, I think it is extremely unfair that some students have to work a part-time job, even a full-time job, and be a full-time student on top of this, and on top of all of that, have an internship in order to graduate. So what makes me stand out as a candidate? Like I said, I'm a senior. I've been in the Reynolds School for 3 years now. I transferred here my first semester, after my first semester of college. But I've been in the Reynolds School for 3 years, and in these 3 years, I've made strong relationships with the faculty and my peers, as well as PR professionals in the field. Like I said, I'm the Vice President of Professional Development and PR SSA, which has allowed me the opportunity to connect with PRs or PR professionals in the real world. And the RSJ is so tight-knit because it is a smaller school compared to others, that I've been able to also make relationships, strong relationships with my peers and also my professors as well, like Allison. And then finally, I have experience in balancing academic leadership and service roles. I have always worked a job throughout college, as well as, like I've talked about before, how leadership positions in the organizations that I'm a part of. And having done all of that, I feel like I've learned how to manage all of these different things while also being successful at all of them. I'd like to close with making it known that I'm committed to making the most of this role. I know that my time here is limited, but I'm ready to collaborate with everyone and take action on the goals that I've set in place. So thank you so much for listening and giving me this opportunity tonight.
Alrighty, with that, we're going to be moving on to some questions. All right, keep those hands out, Senators. All right. Kitsch. Radke. Issa. Barris. I already know what you're going to ask. Bardwaj. Calderon. Any others? Going once, going twice, going thrice. All right, order goes as follows. Kitsch, Radke, Issa, Barris, Bardwaj, and Calderon. Senator Kitsch, go ahead. Senator,
can I ask a follow-up question?
You may.
It's more of a throwaway. What did the Favorite J School course do?
Favorite J School course has definitely been with Allison. I love Allison. Probably crisis communication.
Cool. Good to know. Senator Radke.
So school journalism only holds one seat in the Senate. With you being an Alexander for your college,
being the only voice for girls at the table?
Yeah, so I feel like one of the reasons why I've like gotten kind of like start getting involved, I feel like I found like a new sense of confidence, and I unfortunately didn't have that with like honestly my first 3 years of college, which kind of sucks, but whatever. I think that being the only voice for the J school, I'm very passionate and motivated about bettering it and leaving, leaving a good impact, I guess. Like I said, I know my time is limited, but I will do my best to get the voices heard of the J school, and I think that I can be really important to the Reynolds School. Thank you.
Parliamentarian Issa. Parliamentarian Issa, for the record, thank you so much for your presentation. One of the goals that you had as an ASU1 senator is to advocate for more paid internships. I just wondering if you could elaborate on how you would go about achieving that goal.
Yeah, so I haven't done so yet, but if elected, I would reach out to our director of internships, Claudia Cruz. She does an amazing job, and for the record, the journalism school does such a great job at presenting opportunities. However, like I said, I think they should be paid because of the hard work that journalism students are putting into them. So the first step I would take is to sit down with Claudia and really just go through which opportunities are paid and unpaid and see how we can make a difference in making them only paid.
You may. And just a follow-up question. This is kind of something that I also try to do with the College of Liberal Arts, and when I spoke to our dean, she essentially said that with the current resources that they had, it was impossible. So I'm just wondering if, let's say you speak with your director and she says that we've done as much as we could and we can't do that, would you take steps further to advocate for paid internships, or is that the end of your advocacy?
No,
that's
definitely not the end of my advocacy. The professor I sat down with the other night, Allison Golden, has talked about how she's been advocating for this for a while now. And I do think that although there might be like barriers that I have to overcome, I would be willing to do so. I keep harping on it, but I feel like the work that the J School students do needs to be paid for. And I would just work with the connections that I've made within the Reynolds School to get this done.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Senator Barris.
Sarah Barris, for the record, thank you so much for your presentation. Very simple question. How do you approach conflict resolution?
So approaching conflict resolution, I feel like I'm a very calm and collected person. I feel like an example of this was the other day at work, I had a client come in. He was super upset about his case, and I was very understanding of it, but he came in and literally yelled at me for like 5 minutes straight, and I kind of just let him rant because I understood why he was upset. However, I could really do nothing about it other than talk to the attorney. But in that situation, I really, like I said, just listened and sat back for a second. And then when he was done yelling at me, I approached him in a calm manner. And I feel like that really de-escalated the situation. I feel like with conflict arises when miscommunication happens, I think. And like I touched on, I value communication. And I think that if we were to communicate better with one another, then conflict, I mean, obviously there's always going to be conflict. However, I feel like there'd be a little less conflict if we could all communicate with one another. Thank you.
Senator Bardwaj.
Two questions. I serve the College of Science, but as a fellow RSJ student, I'm sure you understand if Allison hasn't said it 1,000 times by now, the Reynolds School is an ever-changing landscape. What do you believe to be the most pressing issue in the school, and how do you plan on addressing it?
I think one of the most pressing issues are these unpaid internships. I will say it again. I just think that the work we do is really important, and I know the students in my school because it's such a tight-knit community, and I know that they're putting in the work to get these internships paid for, and yeah, I just want to do everything that I can in my power to make this change.
Cool. Second question. Do you have any plans on uplifting student media? If so, what are they?
Uplifting is all.
Student media?
As of right now, no. However, if elected, I will put a plan into motion.
Senator Calderon.
Senator Calderon, for the record, thank you for a great presentation. I just wanted to ask, I work in the office that you originally reached out to as far as the paid internships, and they do refer you to Jim. What was your resolve talking to?
Yeah, so Jim was very passionate about this topic. We talked a lot about the Federal Fair Labor Act and how that act was put into place for internships like this, and we just talked a lot about this. Anyways, and then I messaged him on LinkedIn because he didn't respond to my email. But we just talked about basically, like I've been reiterating, just the importance of getting these internships paid for and why it is so important. Again, like I said, it's unfair for students to be working as much as they do on top of an unpaid internship that is required for graduation. And he really, I think, emphasized how if the schools are going to require this for graduation, they have to.
Senator Castro.
Senator Castro, for the record, you mentioned you work with an attorney. Are you in pre-law pursuit?
As of right now, I'm a little confused. Like I said, I feel like I'm very proud of myself. I've made a lot of change, even in this year alone. Law school wasn't even a thought in my brain sophomore year, which I know for many who go to law school, it is. But right now, I'm figuring it out, is all I'm going to say.
Any other questions? Senator DeBarger.
Hi, thank you for the presentation. I really like your idea about doing like the kind of open forum with students to get opinions. I think one of the issues that I face as a teacher is that with those type of outreach events, people don't really show up. It's always good to be on like any other thoughts on other outreach ideas for connecting with students.
Yeah, so like I said, I plan events for my sorority, and one thing that I wanted to make change was last year, I feel like with our sisterhood events, which for those that don't know are events only for girls to come to, and last year not many people were engaged, and so when I served the position, I really wanted to bring really unique ideas, I guess, to our sorority so that people would be inclined to come to these events. And I know that students don't really read newsletters or like sometimes come to the events that you plan. However, I have seen a lot more traction, I guess, with girls coming to my events in my sorority. So I feel like that background that I have can be used for the events, the outreach events that I want to plan being sent.
All right, we do got 30 seconds left. Any more questions? If not, alrighty. Thank you so much. Alrighty. Would you like to invite the next candidate in?
Yeah.
Cool.
writing, directing. I tend to write horror, mystery, and dramedy. a drama, comedy. My most known film is a film called Move. It's a short film, about 2 minutes in length. It's a noir film. I'm known for that from everyone who's ever watched a film of mine. In my free time, I like to write anything from screenplays and scripts to songs. I also play piano. I'm very artistic and musical like that. Obviously, I love playing video games. I love me good Dr. Pepper. In fact, after this, I'm going home. I'm drinking Dr. Pepper. That's my life. So, my journalism experience thus far. So I worked UOH staff over my high school for a year. That was pretty fun, but I decided to go and continue on in Mountain Lion News. So I went to Sierra Vista High School in Las Vegas, which is the home of the Mountain Lion. That was our thing. So we called our news the Mountain Lion News. I was pretty much the lead news anchor. I would lead the news every day. I also hosted a show called Meet the Staff, where I ran around towards, I interviewed faculty, principals, teachers, and basically the show was to let students know who are your teachers, who's your principals, and give them an understanding of that. I also hosted spin-offs for theater productions, as well as settings as well. I directed a bit, helped out behind the scenes, stuff like that. So this past spring, in April of 2025, months ago, I was at the Nevada legislature. I accompanied RSJ for RSJ Day at the legislature. So basically that day was for the RSJ as well as students to sort of go to the legislature and lobby for bills. So I was there with Associate Dean Gary Barber, as well as Dean Yu and some other professors and faculties. While there, I was paired with the internship coordinator, Claudia Cruz, and we met with several members of NASCAR, Lucia Considine, and Celia Gonzalez. With all three of them, I was lobbying for the film bill. So as some of you may know, there's been talks of doing the film bill here in Nevada to build a studio or two in Las Vegas. So I was there to lobby for that. And I had very, very productive conversations with candidates, including Assemblymember Max Carter giving me a personal cell phone number and encouraging me to reach out to him and to basically, you know, help me pass the vote. He's a big supporter of it. Other than that, with Assemblymember Considine, me and her talked about the phone bill, but we also talked about other legislation, such as maybe establishing a film festival somewhere in Nevada, maybe in Carson City, maybe in here in Reno. We also talked about tourism, economy, and how film or a film festival could help the economy, especially with Lake Tahoe scenery, also like that. So, if appointed as a senator, I would have what I call a journalistic voice. So, as a journalist, there's a lot of values that we have, including upholding our First Amendment rights for speech. But we also must fact check. And most importantly, we need to be non-biased in our work. Because at the end of the day, as a journalist, the things that you write, the things you say, it is very important to stay non-biased, because you are the person giving information to whoever is going to read or see your stuff. And so basically anything comes before us, so such as presentations, legislation, debate, anything I would give through the eyes and lens of a journalist. So student media, the center for the RSJ, it is my goal to make sure student media is successful. Rush Fire, Wolfpack Radio, Insight, basically every student media on campus, it is my goal to make sure that it's successful. I think it is imperative to have an informed student population, because without an educated republic, who are we as a society? And one of my ideas would be to collaborate with RSJ students and professors and make use of the newscasting broadcast studio that we have. In RSJ, we have labs and studios. One of the places we have is this really big studio, has a green screen, it has newscast desk has an LED TV screen. And one of my ideas would be to maybe talk with RSJ professors and faculty and see if you could use like the broadcast desk and maybe produce videos explaining what happens at ASUN, explaining what everyone does here, explaining the questions that students from not just RSJ, but every college that this university has. And also at the Point Center, I would also have a meeting with Richie. Richie is our IT and tech guy at RSJ. He's in charge of the cameras, the equipment, the lighting, everything like that. And so if there's anything that he thinks would need to be done regarding any tech-related issues, I would conversate with him and I would come here Student outreach. It is my goal to have more student outreach for our students. Everyone, regardless of college, I would like to have outreach with them. Overall, it is my belief that no matter where you're from, whether you live on the dorms, you live in the apartment around campus, whether you're a commuter, you live in Reno, whether you live somewhere anywhere around the state, you should feel like you belong on campus because you do. University should be community, and everyone should feel like they belong because they do. At the Point Center, I would also like to connect with the 5 RSJ Light Clubs, which is the Advertising Club, the Journalism Student Council, National Press Photographers Association, the Online Association, and the Public Relations Student Society of America, we call that the BRSSA. I would like to connect with them and their leaders and have outreach with them. But overall, it is my goal to have outreach with everyone. Going off of outreach, as I said before, I had talked with our med associate dean, Carrie Barber, back in April. And before I came here, I actually had speech with her regarding the fact that I would like to be a senator here. And me and her were talking about stuff. And it is my utmost belief that as a senator, you should just have outreach with students. You should have outreach with the school, with the college that you're representing. So at the Point Center, I would be having outreach with every faculty member, professors, anyone in the RSJ. I would even like to request meetings with the dean, his name's Dean Yun. I would request meetings with them in person, over Zoom, however fits our schedules. Because it is my belief that if you're representing a college, you should be reporting back to the people that you're representing. It's only right. Thank you.
Alrighty, thank you so much for your presentation. Are there any senators with questions? Kitch, Custer, Barris, Bardwaj, Bolander, Radke, any others? Going once, going twice, going thrice. All right, list goes as follows. Kitch, Custer, Barris, Bardwaj, Bolander, and Radke. Senator Kitch, go ahead. Senator Custer.
Senator Custer, for the record, thank you for your presentation. It was great. I just was curious about some of the ideas you were talking with your associate for your college and university.
Yeah, so me and her were talking about outreach, which she said is an important part. And also talked about basically the core idea was also outreach, but one of the ideas I wrote was years ago, there used to be, I don't know exactly what it was called, but they used to have basically like these RSJ nights at Rick's Pizza. And everyone would go there. It would be only RSJ students. And students would go, the professors. And then They order pizzas. Everyone would sit there, have pizza, and just be able to bond with the professors, to meet them, and just get to know one another.
Perfect. Senator Barris.
Senator Barris, for the record, thank you so much for your presentation. Very simple question tonight. How do you approach conflict resolution?
How do I approach conflict resolution? I remain very level-headed. Again, as a journalist, it is very important to uphold the First Amendment, free speech. You also should be respectful overall. And as, you know, as a journalist, I would just remain very level-headed. And I would take into consideration the ideas of what my colleagues would be saying. But again, I would be very level-headed.
All righty, thank you. Senator Bardwaj.
Three questions. First, what year are you?
I'm a sophomore.
As a fellow RSJ student, I'm sure you recognize that the Reynolds School is an ever-changing landscape. What do you believe to be the most pressing issue in the school, and how do you plan on addressing it?
I believe the most pressing issue, that's a good question. The most pressing issue right now would probably be probably just the fact that there's not really a lot of outreach. Because from what I've talked with Associate Dean Terry Barker, as well as my fellow classmates from the RSJ, everyone agrees that, you know, there's not really a lot of outreach. No one knows what's going on. No one knows that they can come here to ASUN to talk. So I just think having that outreach, having that connection is right now what's missing from the RSJ.
Awesome. Last question. You mentioned you wanted to help make students be successful. How exactly do you plan on achieving that?
To achieve that, my plan would be to meet with their leaders, the president, vice president of their clubs, associations. And I would talk to them about what should be done, what do you want to be done. Then I would come here and I would propose legislation, or I would talk with fellow senators, and we come to a solution.
Senator Bolander.
Thanks so much for your presentation. Kind of a two-parter here. The first one, I really like the idea of doing like the film updates in the green, like the green room that you had for the meetings. I think that's really neat. How would you go about advertising that? So, I mean, what, and how often? So, like once a week on the Thursday after the meeting. Just curious on how you can talk to that.
So for that, so like I said in the slide, first and foremost, I would talk to professors and the admin. I would try to find a professor or someone who would be interested in at least helping out with that. But overall, I think maybe like once or twice a week, talk about what happens here at ASUN, what senators are doing, and also just to explain just other things about campus, because again, there's not a lot of outreach. So.
Probably, once or twice a week, and,
yeah.
Okay.
I forgot my second question.
All right, thank you, Senator Bolander, and lastly, Senator Radke.
Time do we have
left? Three.
We got 3 minutes. Anybody have any last minute questions they want to ask? Senator Custer, Senator Saporito. Senator Saporito.
Saporito, would you consider running for the 94th session election?
That would be the next session, correct? Mm-hmm. I would consider it, yeah.
Alrighty. With that, we're going to wrap up our questions. So thank you. And then next, you want to just hang outside. We're going to move right into a debate. Senator Custer, would you like to bring up the Zoom back on the monitor, please? Perfect. Alrighty, Senator, stick out your hands far and wide. Would anybody like to start us off with the debate? I saw.
Renew it.
Hold on. Mukasey. Bardwaj. Kitch. Lawson. Calderon. Moss. Castro. Any others? Going once, going twice, going thrice. All right. Order goes as follows. Lucchese, Bardwaj, Kitch, Lawson, Calderon, Moss, and Castro. Senator Lucchese, go ahead.
I just want to say that I thought both candidates were great, and they actually both kind of offered interesting perspectives from the school of journalism and like both sides. I was just a little more fond of Madison Burroughs' direct plan, and I feel as though she's already done a lot of outreach talking with the people within the RSJ, along with going over to the College of Business to kind of see how they do it over there. I thought that was super interesting. And I thought she had a lot of drive. And I like how she answered the conflict question.
Senator Bardwaj.
Yeah, I'm also leaning towards Burroughs at this point. I did my outreach before. I talked to Dean Newman and Associate Dean Barber, and Burroughs didn't say this, but she's also in contact with them and is doing pretty good outreach in regards to the paid internships that are happening right now, for the paid internships, and like increasing or vetting for them on behalf of faculty in the RSJ. I think that a lot of the like qualities that Horvath mentioned, like outreach, there's not a lot of outreach with RSJ faculty, Burroughs has obviously also done. And I think that like, They're both pretty good, like pretty well connected within the RSJ. I would just lean more towards Burroughs because it seems like she has current positions and current connections that would be easily translatable and be able, like she would be able to put those quickly in motion and get to work pretty quickly.
Senator Kitch.
Senator
Parker.
Yeah,
as
everyone knows, my dear peers, I like both genders, but I am leaning towards Ms. Burroughs. I like that she's a senior and she acknowledges she'll be there for a little bit, but she's still willing to try and put in a lot of effort to supporting the J School and ASU, which is definitely needed. I also thought that she had a better understanding of ASU in general. The second presenter has seen a somewhat service level of what we do, and I think the people would definitely be great, but maybe with a little more training of some kind. Yeah, I don't know. I think that they both have really great ideas, but I definitely lean towards Madison. Also, she has a great name.
Senator Lawson, go ahead.
I really liked both candidates. Josh really moved me. I think that Madison Burroughs is a better candidate. She has really good experience and a lot of good ideas. So that's what I'm leaning towards.
Senator Calderon.
Yeah, I'm going to piggyback off that. I think they were both great candidates. I think they both have some great relevant experience. I think that the fact that Josh actually went down to Carson City and has worked with legislators at in Carson City is very impressive. I also just want to point out that Madison did email my office directly to kind of set up meetings as far as the pay internships with Jim. Looking at the email right now, I just thought that was impressive that she was doing outreach before she even had a position with her ASUN. So I am going to be leaning toward her, and I also did really just like her presentation, past slides of it, and the information she included.
Speaker pro tempore Moss.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Wow, we're feeling the same thing, aren't we? You know, in total honesty, I was like completely split between these candidates. I enjoyed how they both brought something completely unique to their presentations. After hearing what you guys have to say, I am going to lean towards Ms. Burroughs for the seat, just because I do think that she has done the outreach, has done really well for herself. She's already started contacting people about the internship question, the paid internship question. So she's already hitting the ground running. It's just a matter of when is she sitting in one of these chairs, you know? So I think I'm going to lean towards Ms. Burroughs, although I do think Mr. Horvath is a fantastic candidate. with his experience in the legislature, those kind of things. I would even maybe direct him towards government affairs after this meeting if he does not win the seat. Just with his experience and his involvement with advocating for legislation on the state and local level, I think maybe government affairs would be a great place for him to get his first feelings of the association. And then if he feels like he's ready to run for the seat, as Senator Saffredo had brought up, then maybe he'll run in the 94th, given that Ms. Burrows is a senior. So with that, I'll yield.
Senator Castro, then Senator Bardwaj.
I want to echo a few of the sentiments other senators have said before me. Also, remember to say Senator Castro for the record. I was really taken by the honesty that the candidate Burrows brought when asked about student media. Although she lacked a plan, she was honest about the fact that she lacked one and clearly is putting effort towards coming up with one, and I think will come up with a good one if she's elected as a senator tonight. I also liked how she mentioned her growth in confidence and in skills since her beginnings at this university. I think that this sort of modesty towards herself is going to be really pleasant at the table if we all welcome her. So I'm in favor of Burrows at this point.
Besides Senator Bardwaj, are there any senators with points of conversation or debate? All right. Senator Bardwaj and Senator Bolander.
I move the previous question.
Second.
Did you do that through unanimous consent? Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Speaker Pro Tempore Moss. Is there any dissent? Any abstentions? All right. That being said, that motion is adopted. And we'll now move into a vote for the candidates for agenda items 12C and D. With that, we're going to ask that the ledge clerk call out she's going to call out your guys' last name, and whatever candidate you would like to sit at this table, you respond with the last name. Make sense? All right, go ahead.
Atkinson.
Burrows.
Barris.
Burrows.
Bourgeois.
Burrows.
Bolander.
Burrows.
Calderon.
Burrows.
Castro.
Burrows.
Dayton.
Burrows.
DeBarger.
Burrows.
Evans.
Burrows.
Huang.
Burrows.
Issa.
Burrows.
Kitch. Custard.
Burrows.
Lawson.
Burrows.
Lucchese.
Burrows.
McAndrews.
Burrows.
Micelli.
Absent.
Moss.
Burrows.
Radke.
Burrows.
Separito.
Burrows.
Villa.
Burrows.
That's the winner.
I hate being in this position, being the fact that unfortunately we're only able to select one of you. You guys both did great. You guys both brought really interesting perspectives that I wish we'd be able to appoint both of you, but unfortunately we can't. But I'd like to congratulate Ms. Burrows. Congrats. Next, I get to swear you in. Afterwards, you're allowed to take a seat anywhere and you can sit. Please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I state your name.
I, Madison Burrows.
Do solemnly swear or affirm.
Do solemnly swear or affirm.
That I will support the Constitution of the Associated Students.
That I will support the Constitution of the Associate Students.
That I take this obligation freely.
That I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation.
Without any mental reservation.
Or purpose of evasion.
Or purpose of evasion.
And that I will well and faithfully.
And that I will well and faithfully.
Discharge the duties.
Discharge the duties.
Of the office in which I'm about to enter.
Of the office in which I'm about to enter.
Congratulations, Senator Burrows.
With that, we're going to be moving back up to, we're still on agenda item 12. With that, we're moving now to agenda item 12A. I made an agendizing error. Whoopsie. All right. Well, we're going to be starting with Ms. Mendoza.
Hi.
Well,
okay. Just hold us one sec. President Longobot's going to give a quick memo.
Yeah. All right, here I am surprising you a little bit. We will mention for you. But so it's with great confidence that Ethan and I nominate Ms. Kira Mendoza for the position Director of Campus and Public Relations. Having served as interim for the past several weeks, Ms. Mendoza has shown not only her qualifications and her ability to step up to the plate, but also real passion for this work. Ms. Mendoza has a sharp artistic eye and a strong understanding of how to blend university branding with a student perspective and experience. She worked diligently as we navigated the thick of homecoming marketing, and she played a key role as our media coordinator, ensuring students were connected to the work of this association. She has also built strong, genuine relationships with the campus partners, staff, and students who collaborate closely with this position. Each of them has shared the same sentiment that she is an absolute pleasure to work with. That matters because this role relies heavily on trust, communication, and consistency. She is more than seamless to work with. She brings warmth, patience, and determination to every single task. And that is exactly why this role requires a bridge between us and the student body, and somebody who empowers others through understanding. So we're lucky to have her, and thank you for letting us take her position today. Great to like her.
Alrighty, sounds good. You'll have 10 minutes to present, and then 5 minutes of questions if there happens to be any. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I'm Jeremy. The same like wavelength, and we're on the same page about everything. Next, I was an executive intern in the 92nd session, and I learned a lot about each branch and each department. And along with that, I learned a lot about marketing and how to do marketing at the association, which leads me to my fourth one, which is I have created a lot of marketing for ASUN, and with that marketing, I have done the homecoming parade posts as well as the takeover for the university's Instagram at ASUN. And so that leads me to my qualifications with marketing. I created this homecoming parade winners post afterwards, and it got a lot of attention and it did really well. And then during my internship last year, I was a part of this event, which also did really well. We got a lot of people to show up, and I was a part of the marketing team on that, and so this is what Inkblot created with our request. And then that's one of the ASUN takeover graphics I did. I also did another one as well as a video. Some goals. I have three pillars, which is candor, community, and creativity. So with candor, I want to continue upholding the standards of ASUN, and I want everything that goes out on the socials, the website, and as well as all of the conversations about ASUN to be appropriate, accurate, and respectable. And then helping other departments with their communication struggles directly. So if they're having trouble doing outreach with other clubs or associations, then I want to help them and make them feel comfortable. And then community, working more with each department, but IDEA and specifically. I really do want to create stories about what you guys do and then putting them into highlights so that students can easily access them and click on it and it's there for them to see. And then IDEA, I really appreciate what they do and what they stand for. I would love for students to know more about them and keep showing up to their events. communication with on-campus resources that just become a B-plot. So even though I'm on the same wavelength now, I want everyone else within the association to as well. So yeah, and then creativity. I want to do an end of year mark on video for all the achievements that we have done within the year. And then bi-weekly pep rooms, which is program highlights, which would be like highlighting one company or one association, I guess, bi-weekly, and then just reminding students that they're there and the discounts are there for them to use. Then more videographers at events to post more reels. This is not only for the end of year Markham video, but as well as just having a recap video maybe for events, as well as keeping them archived for future sessions to use them for students to know to expect at the events. And then keeping up with trends to keep students engaged. Something I loved about Homecoming Week was seeing the programmers and how excited they were to do the reels for the Homecoming events. And they got a lot of attention. So they were just based off of TikTok trends. And I want to keep doing that because the programmers all had a lot of fun and I think the students did as well. So my transition and my experience, so the transition into interim director and how it can help me with the director role. So I have weekly meetings with Carmina where she helped me ease into the interim position and really boosted my confidence in the role because she gave me a lot of support to work efficiently. And then I met with people more. So I met with more marketing chairs, I met with a lot more. I met with you guys more. So yeah. And then I've learned to act fast. So if people are having marketing issues and their event is tomorrow or in 2 days, like they can come to me and I can post it for them. Yeah. And then my experience with all of these things has led me to get the hang of it. And I really feel like confidence has skyrocketed with this role. And I want to also improve more. I want to improve more in my role and what it entails, but also the productivity of what is going on with the association and the marketing. And then I want to be a helping hand to each department and each branch if they have any troubles with outreach, communication, anything. But yeah, that's my presentation. Thank you.
All righty, does anybody have any questions? Sounds good. We're going to move on to a debate. You are entitled to be present if you choose. Are there any senators who would like to start us off with debate? Speaker Pro Tempore Moss.
Okay, I just want to say... Oh, what?
I didn't know you were actually going to go.
Oh, I had to, you called on me. Okay.
Never mind. That's...
I'm just going to say, I really love working with Interim Director Mendoza, and I think she'll be a fantastic Director of PR and Campus and Public Relations for ASUN. She has a clear vision of what she wants to do with the remainder of the session. I'm confident that she can do the work and that she will lead the department. With that, unless you have... I'm just going to motion to previous question if you're down with that. Okay, I move to previous question.
Senator Bardwaj, go ahead.
I moved the previous question for unanimous consensus.
So moved. Or seconded. Seconded.
Whoa, doing my job for me over here. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Senator Barris. Is there any dissent? Any abstentions? All right, that being said, we're moving on to a vote. All those in favor, please designate by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay. Any abstentions? Oy. Here in the chamber, the ayes have it, and the nominee is confirmed. I know.
Yeah.
I did.
I solemnly swear or affirm.
That I will support
the Constitution of the Associated Students.
That I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation.
Or purpose of evasion.
And that I will well.
And faithfully discharge.
The duties of the office.
On which I'm about to enter.
Next, we
we have the Interim Director of Government Affairs, Ms. Hatch. Would you come up here, please?
Oh, wait, I've got this one.
President Algovac, go ahead.
Hi, Senators. It is our honor to present Ms. Isabel Hatch for the position of Director of Government Affairs. It is with great confidence that we bring this nomination forward. Ms. Hatch brings both experience and genuine passion for this role. Having attended two Board of Regents meetings with her, I can say it has been an absolute pleasure to watch her level of preparation, knowledge, and adaptability as she brings to every single space that she enters. That alone speaks to her character. Whether she's in meetings with administration, helping shape our legislative priorities, or leading her team, she approaches each responsibility with care, clarity, and purpose. She is deeply knowledgeable of policy and consistently keeps a watchful eye on the best interests of our student body. I could list her qualifications, her service as Assistant Director of Government Affairs, her background in speech and debate, her appointments as Student Representative and Chief Counsel. But what matters the most is her leadership. Her team truly looks up to her and they trust her courageous, thoughtful approach to public service. It's an honor to have Ms. Hatch part of this association, and even greater honor to present her for this leadership position. Thank you, Senators.
Alrighty, thank you.
Do you have time already?
Yeah.
Alright, go ahead, floor is yours.
Okay, awesome. Good evening now, Senators. I'm Isabel Hatch, for those of you that don't know me, and I'm up the Director of Government Affairs. Get right into
you. Yeah. Oh. What's it about? Just try the clicker on the computer.
Okay. There we go. We'll start with a little bit about my background before moving on to my work as AD and Interim Director, and then my goals for the department, some of the initiatives that will support those goals, the timeline for getting a lot done, and then really my motivation for applying for the position. Oh, there we go. Okay, we're got a handle. I am a current sophomore studying political science and finally declared international affairs a couple weeks ago. I'm planning to pursue a JD and PhD dual degree, but no promises there. Though I was raised in Las Vegas, I have a degree from a military family, so I'm kind of jumping around a little bit before ending up in Vegas. In terms of what I've gotten up to since being at the university, I have been involved with the ACLU of Nevada's UR People Power for social media management. I was a liberal arts and advocate mentor, and hopefully never again next year, because that's a really great experience. I've been working with Nevada Cares Pactivists to prevent power-based violence on campus and off campus, which has also empowered me to work with the NG Task Force on Power-Based Violence, representing both UNR and ULB in that body. And I really began my passion for public service after spending multiple years working with research in the community in Southern Nevada. After a kind of untraditional run in the Government Affairs internship, first working under the department's director, then our policy director, and then our advocacy director, I've really seen nearly every single role within the department very closely, except for projects. Thankfully, we have a great projects director, Deborah Zochi, so I don't really have to worry about that too much. And then I'm currently working as the assistant director before recently stepping into the interim director role in the last couple weeks. So to kind of give a bit of a rundown on what that work as AD and as interim director has looked like. My main initiative that I've been able to work on is administering and developing a curriculum for the Department of Government Affairs internship program with a focus on mentorship and skill building. Three of our interns are actually here today. Shout out everyone with Sheila and Kim for being my favorites. I also was able to, or as interim, have been able to coordinate the department's reaction to the last special session. About a legislative special session, tracking all 14 bills quite closely and assessing their effects on our students. We have actual true interest in only not three or four of those bills, because a lot of them are focused more on infrastructure assistance.
I was also, as President Ogbot mentioned earlier, able to attend the June and September Board of Regents meetings, writing and providing public comment, as well as a handful of agenda items, as well as being able to brief our members of the President's cabinet who went on went to those meetings. I have been able to, especially in recent weeks, meet with the Office of Government and Community Engagement, as well as Nevada's Faculty Alliance, and participated in discussions very recently around food insecurity and staff benefits with ASUN, CSE, and PCB. That's kind of the shortest rundown of what I've done within this position as I can possibly give you. But it's really prepared me for the work that I'm doing as director. So for specific goals for the department for the rest of the session, I fall into three different categories. First is looking outside of the university, second within the university, and third within the department. So for outside of the university, we're really focusing on effective advocacy at multiple levels of government, ensuring students are heard throughout the community. That's at City of Reno and City of Sparks meetings, that's at the Mountain Legislature now that we're having a special session, and as well as talking to our state federal representatives like Senator Cortez Masto and Senator Rosen. For within the university, we're really focused on nonpartisan civic education. Obviously, the Department of Public Affairs is strictly nonpartisan, and it's been through a lot of that work that we've been able to get a lot of our work done, the standard of nonpartisanship. For this, we're specifically attempting to reach all students with a focus on historically unengaged demographics and majors. I'll get into a little bit more of how we plan to do that and how to and also preparing the Department of Government Affairs for future lobbying initiatives. Prior to the legislative session, which lasts basically all of spring semester in odd years, we really don't necessarily have a set framework for how to do that lobbying work. And if we did have one, it's been lost to time or it's outdated. Either it's in a folder somewhere or it's in a binder in the office. And so we kind of lost touch with how to really tackle the legislative session, and it's a lot of the work is left to the semester before it starts. And I think that can kind of limited our efforts, or at least slowed down the adoption of the department to in each of all the community members every time to the legislative sessions. So for initiatives, I'll try to kind of touch on this somewhat briefly. First is public comment participation. This is something that you've heard from me probably already as a body, and you've heard from Advocacy Director Casey through Policy Director Tensio talking about this as well. First, my kind of standard for the department with myself would be achieving 25% participation in public comment from within ASUN. So that's the legislative, judicial, and executive branches. You can get 25% participation from you at specifically the December Board of Regents meeting, hopefully. If not March, then that would be incredibly helpful. This is something that we saw CSUN's president, Kalechi Odunze, achieve, obviously with a much smaller student government, but with a very, very effective rollout. And so if we can support you in any way that we can, one of those ways that we're planning to actually do that is through a public comment workshop, which would be held probably the first week of December, which is something that DCE is already talking about a handful of times. Next is midterm elections and the primaries. Obviously, the primary elections don't have actually occur until May or June, depending on like if you're early voting or not. And so we're trying to make sure the students are really engaged, even though it's a midterm election, which is somewhere that we, across the country, don't get a lot of engagement. And so we're ensuring the department's officers and interns are first trained by Washoe County to register students to vote. That's something that the departments have been trying to do for years and haven't been able to achieve. Yep, Speaker Pro Tem Moss is nodding. That means it's truly been years since we've been trying to get that done. I finally have contact that I got from government community engagement to really reach out to them. And we're hoping to have that done by next semester. We're focusing on tabling events to educate students on primary election candidates in Nevada specific rules, since we do have closed primaries. This is where the nonpartisan civic engagement concern really comes into play, since Nevada primaries are closed for Democrats and Republicans. So we don't want to provide information about candidates to students with a partisan lens when it's only partisan election with partisan primaries. But moving on, kind of on a similar note, is reaching unengaged students. We are already planning with Senator Barris in the early stages of a panel on changing public health policy,
like interstate, like talking about the interstate compacts and student loan forgiveness for public officials. Obviously, we would love to have a lot more engagement on that from anyone that has a lot of pre-med majors within their college. But that's just one example of all of the ways that we're trying to reach historically unengaged students, whether that's your major or a demographic that you come from that's historically not politically or socially engaged. That's who we're trying to reach, especially. It's really easy to get political science students to show up to political science-related events. It's not as easy, as I'm sure many of you realize, to get engineering students or computer science students, for example, to show up to those kinds of events. Another example would be a town hall on affordable housing with the Residence Hall Association, the Graduate Students Alliance, and potentially, in the talks, Senator Angie Taylor. For student-led lobbying strategies, this is the goal that's really focused inward. We are planning to compile contacts, build tracking resources, policy briefs, and public comment shells in order to prepare for the next legislative session so that the groundwork and the foundation is already done and it isn't being completed through February when we're wasting half of the session trying to get our feet under us. We also intend to develop pre-made budgets to pay for lobbying and registration or for travel and to have those passed and ready to go so that we're not unable to even do any lobbying efforts during the session because we're not registered. And so although this is kind of a long but short list of initiatives that I intend to complete within the next few months, it is definitely focusing on all areas of the department and all of the purposes of our department. So as a quick timeline, I don't think I'm going to cover all of this, but it's been 2 hours already, so my presentations. But we're definitely intending to continue tracking necessary bills in the Nevada legislative session and holding events forward for that, and as well as preparing for the Board of Regents meeting in December, hopefully holding a public comment, that public comment that I mentioned earlier within the In January, it'll probably be a bit of preparation time period, beginning to work on that student-led lobbying portfolio over break, and planning the Department of Government Affairs event week with Projects Director Zocchi, which will hopefully occur first or second week in February. And then, obviously, by then, so that we can hold the registration event during that week, being registered with the Washoe County by early February will be of the utmost importance. Then in March, attending the NG Board of Regents meeting and hopefully finishing up that student-led lobbying portfolio by then to present it to this body over the 94th session, but probably this one. But why direct? This is something that I've been asked on multiple occasions, and isn't something that I necessarily had a really good answer to. And frankly, something that I have been wrestling with recently. Why move up to the director position other than out of necessity? But it kind of forced me to think on my kind of transition through like a passion for public service and my journey through that. And it really comes down to loving this university and loving my country. I think that we're able to, and within Gov Affairs, affect students and affect government in a way that we don't see within any other organization or within any, whether that's student government or elsewhere. And so it's really important to me to continue the passion that I've already developed and serve students to the best of my ability. Thanks.
All right, does anybody have any questions for the interim director? No questions. All right, with that being said, we're moving on to a debate. Are there any points of debate or discussion? Senator Bardwaj.
I move the previous question through unanimous consent.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Senator Bears. Is there any dissent? Any abstentions? All right, with that being said, that motion is adopted. We'll now be moving on to a vote for the interim director position to the Director of Government Affairs. All those in favor, please designate by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, please say nay. Any abstentions? Oi. Here in the chamber, the ayes have it. The nominee is confirmed.
Do solemnly swear that I will support
the Constitution of the Associated Students
the Constitution of the Associated Students,
that I take this obligation freely,
that I take this obligation freely,
without any mental reservation,
without any mental reservation,
or purpose of evasion,
or purpose of evasion,
and that I will well,
and that I will well,
and faithfully discharge,
and faithfully discharge,
the duties of the office,
the duties of the office,
on which I'm about to enter,
on which I'm about to enter.
Alrighty, now that we have filled our Senate seat and the rest of President Algobat's cabinet, we're going to be moving on to committee reports. Then after that, I'm going to motion for a 5-minute recess before we get into legislation. So let's get right into it. Senator Kitsch with Academics and Student Affairs. Go ahead. Moving down to the Committee on Budget and Finance, Senator Maselli is not here, so Vice Chair Moss will be giving the report.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have Chair Maselli's report. He says, hi, everyone. Short report for Budget and Finance tonight. We met today to review the inkblot elections and government affairs accounts. No meeting next week, but we will meet again on Wednesday, December 3rd at 4 p.m. I hope you all are having a great Thanksgiving. I am grateful to be a part of such a high-achieving session and group of individuals. Best, Chair Maselli.
Lovely. All right, moving down to the Committee on Democratic Civic Engagement, Prime Minister Issa.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. DC will be meeting this Friday at 5:30, where we'll be hearing a presentation from the Office of Service Learning and Civic Engagement, and we'll be having a discussion series to talk about Veterans Day, or a Veterans Event in the spring for next year. So that's a deal with my time.
All right, thank you. Moving down her list to the Committee of Ideas, Senator Castro.
The Committee on Ideas will be meeting this Friday at 3:30 in the Frequency of Public Justice Conference Room, where we will hear reports as usual. In addition, I would like to say that the committee favorably recommends to this table SR-93, a resolution to support and protect the Dockin Pact. I will also be sending out a link to meet for the next semester. Please.
Thank you. Moving down our list to the Committee on Government Operations, Senator Bolander.
Senator Bolander, for the record. Good evening, everyone. Government Operations will be meeting Monday, December 1st.
All right, thank you. Also, I do believe, just for the record, you should have four pieces that we've sent you today. Cool. Moving down our list to the Committee on SSW, Senator Barris.
Senator Barris, for the record. SSW met last Friday. We went over assigning new liaison positions, heard from the departments of the executive branch, and discussed SSW week very briefly. We also elected a new vice chair. Congratulations to Senator Bardwaj. We plan to meet December 5th, agenda items TBD.
All right, thank you. Moving down our list to the Special Committee on Food Insecurity, Senator Saporito.
Hello, everyone. We're going to be meeting post-Thanksgiving break. I'll give you guys a date soon. We had our last meeting Thursday on November 15th, where we elected a vice chair and filled out all of our liaison positions. We're waiting for confirmation for initial messaging with assembly members and state senators for PAC divisions. We got the list, by the way. And then we'll be continuing discussion with Nevada Diner on the donation swipe drive. That started one day ago, so if you guys have swipes, please sign in. All right, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Moving down our list, Parliamentarian Issa.
No reports.
Thank you. Speaker Pro Tempore Moss.
Hello, 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 everyone. You can tell I'm in a good mood because of that. Nothing much. Make sure that you fill out the outreach form if you haven't already. 2 hours required this week, but I'm following suit with Speaker Acklin with the next outreach period. You're cutting it to 2 hours next outreach period, right? With that, I will be cutting the intern hours down to 1 hour per outreach for the next outreach period. Just to make it easier, it's Thanksgiving. We all need to go see our families. Spending time with loved ones is super important. So I don't want you to stress about meeting with your intern and prioritizing your family. So I'm also reducing it just to 1 hour required for the next outreach period. They had a great presentation on Robert's Rules. They played Kahoot at the last meeting to get their legs underneath them for Robert's Rules, because learning Robert's Rules is a hefty task. So very excited for them. I hope they had a great time. I had a great time hosting the Kahoot for them. But this week we'll be getting more stuff together for the Senate in Action project. We're going to take a sharp left turn from our presentation and assignment focused like curriculum, and we're going to move to the more practical side of learning how the AHU and Senate works. So we're going to be focusing on the Senate in Action project for the rest of the session from this point on. I'll be creating a more in-depth guide, because I realized as I was looking at the syllabus, it does talk about the Senate in Action project, but not in to the detail that I want it to. So I'm going to create a supplementary document or a supplemental document that goes into detail of what this looks like, what the intern's role looks like, what the mentor's role looks like in this project, and then just what they're gonna be doing. So they'll be getting in their committees this week. We'll be doing mock Senate meetings, mock committee meetings. You as the mentors are there to guide them. So they're gonna be learning this week how to do meaningful outreach. And how to write meaningful legislation. That's their subject for this week. And then after that, we are gonna not meet for the week of Thanksgiving, obviously, because they meet on those Fridays, so all of them are gonna be out of town for Thanksgiving. And then the week, I will be inviting the directors of elections to come in and present to the interns, because as you know, we're getting super close to December, and when we get back in January, it's going to be filing, it's going to be running for office, all those crazy things. So I want to make sure our interns feel prepared. So I am going to invite them in and then give them a presentation on elections and advice as well. So if you are interested in coming to any of those meetings, please. I want you guys to, I know some SSW members stopped in and watched them play Kahoot this week, but if you're feeling like you want to come to these meetings, absolutely swing on by Frankie Pseudo-Papa's President's Conference Room 5:30 p.m. on Fridays. So that's what I think I have for everyone. Any questions?
Senator Barris.
Senator Barris, for the record, who won the Kahoot?
Who won the Kahoot? Well, both our winners are right here, Miss Mari Stone and Jenna Ray Navarte Pack. I am so excited. There are Robert's Rules experts now, so I hope you're ready to school us all on Robert's Rules, right? I have some prizes for them that I'll give to them probably either tonight or Friday. So, so we had a fun time. But thank you for that question, Senator Barris.
All right, thank you. In regards to that, are there any questions for agenda items 9A through I? All right, moving on to myself for the Committee of Oversight, and I'll just give my speaker report as is as well. I'll start with Oversight. Oversight is meeting next month on December 8th at 6:30 p.m. in room 403, I believe it is. But with that, we're going to be making sure we're able to pick a time for next semester when to meet. We'll also be going over this current outreach period. So if you did not submit your outreach today, I would do that as soon as you can. just because it is due today, 2 weeks is today. But with that regard to outreach and what Speaker Pro Tempore Moss had said, just because of the Thanksgiving break, I don't want to give you guys more outreach than, like, I'm just not going to do that. So we get back on the 3rd to have our meeting, and then the week after that is the 10th, which is dead day. So I'm only assigning you guys 2 hours of outreach for that, technically 3 weeks, since you guys will have Thanksgiving break to do some stuff. But yeah, you guys will have 3 weeks to do 2 hours of outreach along with your hour with your intern, so I think that's plenty fair. So please get that in. It's our last outreach period. And like I said before, most of my committee reports for oversight, you guys have been doing excellent outreach. We really haven't had any problems. You guys have been really doing a lot of good stuff. So happy to see the table's doing a lot of your guys' accomplishments or stuff you were set out elected to do. Hold on, Senator DeBarger, I'm almost done. And then in regard to my speaker report, next week on the 3rd of December, the Student Health Center in Nevada Cares is coming in. So those are our last presentations for the semester. So thank you guys for bearing with that. I hope you guys were able to learn a thing or two just about the different faculty and different admin that are on this campus that represent us and help us and make sure we can all be students here at the end of the day. For our next meeting, which is going to be on December 3rd, like I'd previously mentioned, in regard to agendizing, I had realized I need to agendize this Tuesday at 5:30. So that is my cutoff. So if you have anything that you would like to see on the agenda for December 3rd, please get it into me by Tuesday at 5:30. That is when I will be agendizing, no sooner, no less, just because I need to give myself grace period and I need to account for the days that we do not have school, meaning like Thanksgiving break and then the family day after that, which I think is the Friday. So please, please, please get anything you have to me by Tuesday. As always, my one-on-one link is pinned in our team, so if you guys ever need to chat, whether it's about Senate, whether it's about school, whether it's about anything else going on or anything I can help you guys with, whether it's legislation writing, whether it's event coordinating, whether it's stuff you want to come up for stuff with your intern. I mean, that's more his wheelhouse. But if you guys ever want to talk to me pretty much about anything at ASUN, my door is always open. I'm a resource for you guys to use. So that is there for you guys. In regard to the open Senate seats, we have two candidates for the School of Public Health, which is what we will be seeing next week on December 3rd. And then we'll have some seats open next semester and stuff like that. And I'm going to try to get those appointed as soon as we can, just because of the time frame. You know, we get back third week of January, and then second or third week of April, our session's out. So really, we only have around 3 months to enact change or enact anything you guys were elected out or appointed to do. So there's that. So if you know anybody in the College of Science, and I believe engineering will still be open, I believe. I think we still have one spot. If you know anybody in those colleges or know anyone who is curious about it or needs more information, they can always reach out to me and email me. I'm more than happy. I met with Senator Dayton before she was appointed to make sure that she was kind of knowledgeable on what she wanted to accomplish. So with that, I'll take questions. Any questions, Senator Bardwaj?
Do you know how many have applied for science?
I believe it's either zero or one candidate. I can't remember off the top of my head. Any other questions? Senator DeBarger.
So just to clarify, the outreach period that starts today ends on what day?
December 3rd.
Okay, thank you.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that checks out. Any other questions? Senator McAndrews.
We don't have a Senate meeting next Wednesday.
No, I wanted to be a good speaker, and I didn't want you guys to meet the day before Thanksgiving, so you're welcome. Any other questions? Alrighty, with that being said, I'm seeking a motion for a 5-minute recess to unanimous consent.
So moved.
So moved by Speaker Pro Tempore Moss. Is there a second? Second by Senator Lawson. Is there any dissent? Any abstentions? With that being said, the Senate will reconvene at 8:02 p.m.